You're with Alan Saunders. This is By Design.
Finally this week, we look at our use of energy through the eyes of Lee Shipper, who's a project scientist at Global Metropolitan Studies at the University of California, Berkeley. Dr. Shipper has researched the trends in car usage across 8 industrialized nations, including the USA and Australia. The results are intriguing. Passenger travel, which grew rapidly in the 20th century, appears to have peaked in much of the developed world. In other words, everyone who can drives, drives. Is this a sign that demand for travel and the demand for car ownership in these countries, especially here in Australia, has reached saturation point? Well, let's find out. Welcome, Lee Shipper.
How are you? Greetings from California. I should point out this work was actually done at the other place I teach, Stanford University. They're great rivals, but for me, it's all the same.
Well, yes, indeed. You did the work with a Stanford University doctoral student, Adam Millard Ball. And the countries that you studied had a high gross domestic product per capita: the United States, Canada, Sweden, France, Germany, the UK, Japan, and Australia. And you studied them from their usage from 1970 to 2008. And essentially, we're using our cars less.
Well, the result, it's really remarkable. When you think about it, you have three big countries, Oz, the United States, and Canada, a very crowded country, Japan, a pretty crowded country, the UK and maybe Germany. France and Sweden are big by European standards. There's a variety of incomes. The slowdown or the peak in travel is first of all, it's not just cars, it's everything. To some extent, some of the drop in car use has come back for bus or rail. But the main point is that it's higher fuel prices, but it's also some of us are getting older. It's congestion in cities. I've been in traffic jams in Sydney and Melbourne. I would hate to think that Australians have to face every day, but I know they do. And it's also, perhaps, to some extent, some of the time we would have spent traveling, we're now spending overseas. That's part we don't know. Nevertheless, if I was a transport planner, if I was Victoria DOT or Queensland DOT or New South Wales DOT, I'd say, this is really important, because the myth that the traffic would always keep growing has weakened, if not broken permanently. The relationships have changed.
I don't think you'd want to be a New South Wales Director of Transport. I think a thankless task. But what you're saying is then that less use of cars doesn't mean what you might expect it to mean, which is a concomitant increase in use of public transport.
Well, actually, you know, for the case of Australia, a fellow named Adam Peacole runs a little group in Brisbane that looks at all the Australian data. And the trends we seem to see is that the long-term fall in the use of public transport has turned around in Australia and the U.S. and most of Europe. Now, it's not back to where it was in the 1950s. It's not back to its share of the 1950s either. But the decline has ended. And part of it is because I think both younger and older people, and some in between, are beginning to realize being stuck out in the suburbs isn't as fun as living in the city. And once you live in the city where it's denser, you find it's easier to move around on transit, and often it is clumsy to take the car. When I have to get to Stanford to teach from Berkeley, I take the train because life is too short to waste an hour and a half fighting traffic at peak time when I can be reading my books, I can be emailing, I can be correcting my lectures and stuff like that. And I think that all of those factors have figured in this really interesting plateau, we can call it, maybe peak if you want.
But all this has happened when there's been a considerable rise in energy use, petrol particularly.
You mean prices?
Prices as well, yes.
But interestingly enough, for almost all the countries we looked at, the cost of petrol or diesel to go 1 kilometer is still lower. It was still lower in 2008 than it was in the early 1980s when it was really at its peak, because our cars, yes, even in Australia and the U.S., have become modestly more efficient. So we're still not paying the peak amount per kilometer. And what that says is that the changes that we've seen, which may indeed be price-induced, are much bigger than a lot of the people who said, oh, we'll never give up our cars. We have given up our cars. We're not totally, but we're using our cars considerably less than the standard models would have predicted, given that we've seen modest increases in what it costs to drive a kilometer.
What about car ownership? I assume that at the beginning of the period that you were studying, say 1970, people all wanted to own their own car. But do you get to a point eventually where everyone who could possibly drive does drive?
Well, that's true. In the U.S., there are actually more cars and the sport utilities or light trucks that are used as cars than there are people with driver's licenses. Australia isn't quite that high, and neither is Canada, but they're up with Germany and Italy as the most motorized countries, really, in the world. And so what that says is, okay, we've all gone through this generational thing, which for Australia, the U.S., Canada, maybe was four generations. It happened in Europe in two generations, really, since World War II. And, of course, it's happening in China, perhaps, in half a generation. I think our country's fascinations with the car may be fading a bit. So it's not the end of the car, but the relationship could change radically. And, of course, for Australia, like the U.S. and Canada, a big country with cities separated by a big open space, it doesn't mean the end to using the car between the cities, but it may change how we get around within the cities.
So when does this start to happen? When did we reach saturation point and start to cut back?
Well, one of my colleagues at Stanford, Andrea Schaefer, has shown that over a huge range of income and over many, 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 almost a century of time, people spend about an hour a day traveling. And people who don't want to spend more time traveling travel farther, going faster. And so one of the interesting questions is the extent to which air travel, you know, and you've got competition in Oz, and so there's lots of cheap travel to go from East Coast to West Coast. High-speed rail travel in Europe is stealing a lot of air travel from the sort of 300 to 500-kilometer markets. It may take off in the U.S. It's the basis for intercity travel in Japan. It will probably become the basis for intercity travel in China and get a great deal in many other Asian countries. And so you don't need to spend more time traveling if you can go 300 kilometers an hour on high-speed rail in relative comfort without all the hassles you get when you go to the airport. And so it's a question of how much we spend traveling faster, farther, and how much we spend of our remaining travel time staying home, staying close to home, our regular commute to and from work. And, of course, the other thing is that as we get older, more and more pensioners, if pension systems hold up, they're going to have a lot of free time, and they're going to probably want to travel. And that'll be interesting. Will they travel in bus loads to Uluru? Will they travel in plane loads to Bali? Will they travel in train loads in Europe, around Europe on high-speed rail? We just don't know.
On ABC Radio National, this is By Design. I'm Alan Saunders, and my guest is Dr. Lee Schipper, whose recent study of eight industrialized nations shows that car usage has reached saturation level. And what about you? Are you driving less? If so, why? And is it because you have gone back to public transport, or you're walking or cycling more? We'd also be curious to know whether you own a car or share ownership of one. Lee, how does Australia fare? We're a large country with rather poor public transport compared to a lot of other places in the West.
I think if you compare with Europe, you're not quite as compact, but if you compare with the U.S. and Canada, I have to admit that I'm very impressed with the Sydney system. I've traveled a great deal on that one. Melbourne and Brisbane are a little more spread out. I've worked with authorities in Perth. We even have a study of South Perth and how, working with the mayor, how we could make it more compact. It comes down to how compact your cities are. And I note that one of your previous guests was discussing the huge size of Australian homes. And, of course, if you want a huge home, you got to move to the suburbs. I think in the end, for Australia, the question is, you're relatively energy rich and therefore may not have the same concerns that we energy paupers have in the United States. But you have to decide at some point how do you price energy? How do you price access to cities? Do you have congestion pricing, like which I think has fared quite well in London? And how do you try to plan land uses better so a larger share of people have the option of walking a couple blocks to fast bus or fast rail connection to the center of the city or to places of pleasure in the outskirts?
Just finally, the design of cars and the impact of the GFC, the pressure of changing our lives to live in a world undergoing climate change. How, in your opinion, will these factors play out for us? I mean, will we see the popular use of electric cars and less reliance on carbon energy?
Well, you know, I mean, I've been testing. I borrowed one of the Austin Mini Electrics from BMW and it spent 10 days driving around on that. They're wonderful, but they're small. And so the first step, and I've seen some of the research in this direction in Australia as well, the first step is to agree that we're going to have smaller cars that don't need to go so fast and don't need to go so powerful. If we agree on that, we cut our petroleum use for cars in half. Then the transition to anything else becomes simple. If, on the other hand, we insist that we're going to drive to Uluru on batteries with a snorkel and all that, and these are lovely pictures in my mind of this, that's going to be very, very expensive to have battery power for that kind of distance. Perhaps fuel cells, but again, whatever you say is the alternative, if you have an Australian or a U.S.-sized car or an SUV, you're really running the risk that you just can't afford to fuel it. And I think that's where the great change has to be. So it's smaller cars, driven less, and then we have a lot more choices.
Well, Lee Shipper, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you very much, and good night to all of you.
Details of Dr. Shipper's work on our website. And are you driving less? If so, is it because you've gone back to public transport or perhaps walking or cycling more? We'd love you to tell us, and we'd also be interested to learn whether you own a car or share ownership of a car. The place to go is our website, abc.net.au/rn/bydesign. Just go to the story and click on Add Your Comment. You can hear us every Wednesday between 3 and 4 p.m., on Saturday mornings between 9 and 10, and at any time of your choosing on the web. The show is produced by Jan Ryan and Mark Wakeley. John Diamond was the sound engineer, and I'm Alan Saunders.